Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
But remember, before the pandemic, under the TCJA, the tax reforms of 2017, it was the fastest closure of income inequality in American history.
Debate before the House on a budget resolution. Arizona Representative David Schweik.
What's being discussed here is, do you allow those very tax benefits for small businesses, for individuals, to expire? Now, we don't get a huge economic pop from continuing them. You maintain consumption, but we know if you don't do them, that loss of consumption in those populations actually really hurts us economically.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Our nation has experienced many years blessed with a robust and successful farm economy. But current conversations around farm office tables and mailboxes full of farm dispersal sales tell a vastly different story happened in the last 5 years.
Testifying before the Senate Ag Committee, Anna Reinhardt, a Mississippi specialty crop grower.
New equipment is 30 to 40% higher. Many parts and repairs have doubled or tripled. Pack cow supplies for specialty crop producers have increased by at least 50%. Wage rates have increased in our state by 30%. Farmers who were once profitable enough to finance themselves are now paying 8 to 10% interest rates on multi-million dollar operating loans just to try to stay afloat. These increases are taking hundreds of thousands of dollars off of farmers' bottom lines every year. Some of these same farmers have experienced unprecedented weather events that have diminished and destroyed their crops. And finally, market pricing for crops like soybeans and sweet potatoes has been stagnant, if not in decline. Farmers are trying to claw their way out, but they cannot pay their debts with losses.
An issue that looms large, labor issues.
Specialty crop producers like me are faced with another variable that, if not addressed soon, is going to be the catalyst for our closure. The number of messages I've received in the last 24 hours regarding this testimony has made an impression on me. There are so many constituents watching today. I sense they are encouraged that this hearing was called, and they are hopeful that you're listening and will help us. While I understand this committee doesn't have direct jurisdiction over the H-2A program reform, I urge you to share my testimony with your colleagues to make them aware that we are desperate for relief. The adverse effect wage rate was initially established to protect domestic farm workers from foreign worker wage depression. But decades later, the domestic workforce has almost entirely moved away from own farm jobs. In 2023, of the 380,000 H-2A eligible positions, only 10,000 domestic applications were received. 97% went unanswered. Since 2019, the AWER in our state has risen almost 31%, resulting in an additional $12 million impact to Mississippi sweet potato growers annually. We don't understand why the rate continues to rise so dramatically, using the rationale that it is to protect a domestic workforce that no longer exists. Seasonality restrictions are also affecting our farmers. We increasingly need a year-round solution. Our long-term domestic crews are dwindling, and there don't seem to be any new workers willing to fill the gap. Some farms are closing for 2 months, missing critical sales until their H-2A workers return. Finally, in the last 24 months, the Department of Labor has issued over 3,000 pages of H-2A rulings. Please understand, H-2A workers live on our farms with our families for months at a time. We have very positive relationships with our workers. To suggest that it requires thousands of regulations to establish a fair, safe, and mutually beneficial employer-employee arrangement is offensive to farmers. Our livelihoods are inextricably linked to the presence and quality of our workforce. We appreciate the willingness of our H-2A workers, and we understand the sacrifices they make to provide a better life for their families, much like we do. We support a straightforward, common-sense program that protects our workers without burying us under a mountain of policy.
It's urgent.
I hope my testimony today has provoked a sense of urgency. This situation is playing out in families all across our country. I ask that you assess the ramifications of the loss of food production from within our borders. Food grown and raised domestically is safer, of a higher quality, and it is most importantly a matter of national security. We are so close to losing the American farm. Please help us pave a way forward, remove our obstacles, and lead our country into a renewed awareness that without food, nothing else matters.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
This vote, the ayes are 217, the nays are 215. Majority voting in the affirmative, the concurrent resolution is adopted.
Before the House passed the budget resolution earlier in the week, Representative David Schweikert from Arizona.
What will our spending be this year? It will be $7 trillion. What is actually in the cuts? Remember, the horrible draconian cuts is $120 billion in a year. So $7 trillion, a trillion is $1,000 billion for those of you who are math dysfunctional. Let's walk through. And $120 billion is the Armageddon. So let's actually have a little, and I'm probably going to end up using these a couple times here because I think they make a point. The way a reconciliation budget is laid out, it creates a series of boxes. Here's all these authorizing committees. We need you to find savings. We need you to find those savings through modernization, through waste and fraud. And we're going to spend a little time actually talking about some great documents, even the Biden administration produced on waste and fraud. And I'm sure every member here has actually read them. And some of the other articles we have from Wall Street Journal doing on Medicare Advantage and all these others. And many of them, when all added up, are trillion-plus dollars. Are we capable of actually being intellectually honest and walking through? So one of the charts, and we're going to come back to this again, is you've been hearing the Armageddon being said, but it's Medicaid. Look, I used to do my state's Medicaid budgets. Now, Arizona has a somewhat unique system. We actually buy managed care, capitated policies for our indigent population, and it's remarkably effective. And we deliver remarkably effective health care cheaper than almost every other state in the country, demonstrating that actually plan design, managed design, actually can both be much healthier for our society and save money. But you don't actually start to have those revolutionary conversations in Congress until you have moments of stress like this. So, once again, I just want to add, in the document, 96% of the budget authority within energy and commerce is not touched. We're talking 4% of their budget authority, and that's spread over a decade. If we can't find 4% of modernization in these programs, we're actually in much more trouble than even just the brain trust here as we tell our stories.
Managing time in opposition, Virginia's Don Beyer.
While we're doing math, when I divide $2 trillion in savings and cuts over 10 years, I get $200 billion a year.
Both Beyer and Schweikert are members of the Joint Economic Committee. Schweikert countered.
And to Mr. Beyer, I want to make sure I'm communicating right, but at least we're down to, instead of the Armageddon, his number was, well, if you cut $2 trillion over 10 years, that's $200 billion. He's right, but that's actually not what's in the document here. It's functionally 1.2 with a shock absorber. Once again, I'll give you the shock absorber, depending on what Ways and Means ultimately does. So thank you again. I mean, it shows actually we're fairly close on math.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
You know, cash markets have softened a little bit the last couple of weeks, feeder cattle as well as fed cattle.
Dr. Darrow Peel is an Oklahoma State Extension livestock economist looking at the cash markets.
All of the markets have taken a little bit of a breather. That's after, an outstanding January, and I think that's part of what's going on is we're seeing a little market correction. There's a number of factors playing into it, but, you know, think of it as a correction, and so we've seen a little bit of softness in these markets.
What about for futures?
Same thing on the futures. In fact, that's part of where this is coming from. Again, we've had such a bull market in the futures. Not surprising that, the long positions would take a little break, maybe take a little profits out of the market. Combine that with a lot of uncertainty on the political, macroeconomic level. Some weather issues, the Mexican border situation, all of those things, I think, kind of set the stage for the market to take a little breather and pull back just a little bit.
For the month, markets for live and feeder cattle have both been in the red. Is this a correction?
So the supply fundamentals are still what they are. They're longer term in nature. You know, we're going to continue to work towards those as we go forward. But in the short run, there's lots of reasons why we could see this sort of thing. So, yeah, I'm still going to call it a correction. I think it's just one of these things we're going to work through. And it's something we've talked about with producers, that even though we're in a bull market and we're still very bullish on the market in general, but we're also subject to a lot of uncertainty and volatility in these markets. And I think we're seeing an example of that now. And I think it's the kind of thing that producers have to continue to do risk management and be prepared for, because we can see these things. They're probably going to be relatively short-lived. And so, maybe not a major problem long-term, but if you get caught in the middle of one, having to market some cattle could be a pretty serious problem for you.
A few weeks ago, packers started reducing kill volumes, but did demand soften?
We have seen box beef pull back a little bit over the last couple of weeks. Still at a very healthy level. I think it's still above year-ago levels. But we've seen that. Now, if you look in the first few weeks of the year, across the board, wholesale cuts were generally higher for most things. The one exception has been tenderloins, which is our most expensive steak cut, has been a little bit lower. But it's also almost exclusively a restaurant item. So, it's kind of midwinter kind of a thing for that. But by and large, we've seen stronger prices there. And so the current correction, again, I'm going to use that term, I think is just that. We'll see how the spring demand develops as we go forward.
So adding all the numbers together, how do we end up with more cattle today than last year?
We've still been above year ago levels, going forward, and we're continuing to see the underlying fundamentals very strong. We're going to get to cattle on feed here in a minute and talk about that as well. But just the overall situation. We had such high prices in January. We had relatively large auction volumes. And part of that, I think the prices are just pulling in as many cattle as possible. So that kind of shows up in the supplies short term, but it doesn't mean there's more cattle out there. There's actually less cattle. And so we're going to continue to see changes in timing, but not the overall supply situation.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Immigration is a hot debate in America right now, and agriculture labor is closely tied to it. It's nice to be noticed, but these circumstances are less than favorable.
Ben Echeverry is from Deming, New Mexico. He's a New Mexico chili grower testifying before the Senate Ag Committee.
As you know, most produce in this country is hand harvested. As such, we have a tremendous need for the human touch and the hard work that comes with it to plant, grow, and harvest our products. As our economy is developed, far less people pursue work on the farm. With this challenge, we have become more reliant upon the H-2A program to shore up the gap in agricultural employment. Unlike large acreage crops like corn or cotton, we do not have reliable automation and mechanization options for produce. Consumers demand perfect peppers at the grocery store with no blemishes and any slights thereof. The New Mexico Chili Association has spent a lot of time trying to develop automation solutions for our industry with the help of USDA. This work needs to continue and expand until we solve the riddle for chilies as well as other vegetable crops. While this committee does not have jurisdiction over immigration, I do want to share a few words on this topic. First, the H-2A program, as we know, is broken and it needs to be fixed. The program is expensive, loaded with numerous costs and paperwork involved, and is at times tortious as best. Second, we need to have a functioning and fair immigration system. I have seen many leaders in my rural community who came to this country long ago and enriched it. There is a middle ground, and it's my hope this committee can use its influence to elevate the need for ag labor reform. Trade and tariffs are also a burning issue, and our growers have seen this issue close up for years. Currently, the domestic red chili production in the Southwest is down by 50% across the board since 2018. This is largely due to foreign paprika being shipped to intermediaries, repackaged as intermediary paprika, then shipped to the U.S. with the landed cost 10 to 15% below the cost of a domestic grower's on-farm price, let alone the cost of dehydration and packaging.
He says, as it comes to the next farm bill, there are three improvements that could be made.
First, the specialty crop block grant is incredibly valuable and has helped our growers gain access to marketing materials for increased consumer education. As Senator Lujan knows, we have a wonderful certified program that protects our products so they aren't confused with imports, often gaining our growers a premium. Second, the availability of water, especially in desert-producing regions, is becoming less consistent and reliable, and it's critically important that conversation programs like EQIP be bolstered to help growers use federal matching money to switch to more efficient irrigation systems. Finally, specialty crops have less support, higher risk, and unfortunately a weaker risk mitigation system to rely on than our friends in row crops. Right now, our industry relies on an outdated crop insurance program that USDA helped set up in the 1980s. We need to correct this immediately to help ensure our farm survival.
And in closing, says farm policy has done more than just provide food.
Due to the efforts of the Farm Bill and the legislative history of this body, we have created a food policy program that has helped us shrug off wars, would-be famines, economically trying times, and set the standard on which the modern agricultural model in the world was created. I implore this Congress to set aside partisan differences to make sure that farmers have the support to continue provisions for enough food to eat and enough food to make sure our next-door neighbors do not go without.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Does the left really want to raise taxes on the average American family $2,853? Is that the plan here?
House debate earlier in the week on a budget resolution. Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
Because this is 63% of those who are tax filers. We'll see their taxes go up. Is that the plan here?
Schweikert is the vice chair of the Joint Economic Committee. Also on that committee, Don Beyer from Virginia.
Mr. Chairman, let me just respond to my good friend from Arizona. No, that is not what Democrats want. We don't want to see taxes go up for average middle-class Americans at all. But this is what our budget experts say, based on the budget resolution before us, is that it will, as my friend Mr. Schweikert knows well, to achieve significant cuts, the kind of cuts that you're talking about, inevitably we have to look at Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. We look at the fact that in Virginia, just eliminating Medicaid Advantage is 660,000 Virginians. We look at Medicare, 46% of the children in America receive their health care through Medicaid. And then we look at Medicare, it's beyond belief what that would do. I am looking forward to somehow seeing how you achieve the massive budget cuts that are in this resolution without touching those. That's why you've heard so much concern today about what this will do to the average American people. It's not that we don't want to revisit not raising taxes on the American public. We also just don't want to cut away their health care, their SNAP benefits, their ability to put food on the table, and the like. And, Mr. Chair, I am ready to close when my distinguished chair of the Joint Economic Committee tells me it's time.
Gentleman of chairs, gentleman from Arizona.
Mr. Chairman, just because I want to help Mark, because I know this is heresy around here, truly one of my favorite members to work with, even though we're on different sides of the aisle, you may want to retract the word Social Security, which you just said, because you know Social Security cannot be allowed in any of this package.
Happy to retract
it. And with that,
but Mr. I also noticed that our anxiety about Social Security will not go away.
Oh, no, no. And who else has been working for a decade now to save it? Because remember, in 2033, about halfway through the year, the trust fund is gone. And is that a Republican or Democrat problem? I would say it's a morality problem. We will be doubling senior poverty in America in 8 years. And how often are we allowed to come talk about it?
Schweikert has been saying now for years, it's time for transformational change.
What's the single biggest cost in our society? This is where Schweikert soaks himself in kerosene and plays with matches, Mr. Chair. Turns out it's obesity. Our brothers and sisters, we calculate over $9 trillion in additional healthcare costs over the next decade. What would happen if the left and the right actually said, we are going to fixate on the way we deliver healthcare, the way we deliver nutrition support, the way we do agriculture policy, that we are going to make our help our brothers and sisters be healthier? Oh, by the way, family formation, the use of healthcare, the ability to have a life. Maybe it's moments like this where we go to battle and committees that have really smart people, but armies of lobbyists outside these hallways who look at us, who stress out when we start saying, time to modernize, time to better find a better, faster, more elegant way to deliver services and slow down the piling of debt.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Last year was our third year in a row that we basically had very little production at all.
Travis Myers is a cotton producer from O'Donnell, Texas, and president of Plains Cotton Growers.
We're in a tough spot right now, and unfortunately, looking at 25 here, we're doing lots of plowing and stuff in the fields, but the moisture situation is not real good, and of course, the price is even worse than that. So we're trying to just keep our heads up and do what we know to do.
Many acres south of that Lubbock area are dry land acres. How much rainfall is needed?
We're farming in the middle of the desert, but, you know, we really just have to have between 15 and 20 inches of rain in a calendar year to actually make a crop and be profitable at it. You know, we don't get a whole lot of moisture in this part of the world during the winter time, and count on those early May and June storms to provide most of our moisture. But the trouble we've had in the last few years is it's August, which is the time of the year when we're trying to fruit those plants and grow bowls. And we've just kind of gotten into a pattern here, and it's kind of quit raining during that time for us. And then plus, having 100-degree plus days on top of that. And so we've just kind of been behind the eight ball with this weather deal for a few years.
20 years ago, producers could pencil out at prices we're seeing today. What's changed?
I've been farming for nearly 45 years now, and I've grown a lot of 70-cent cotton and made money at it. But during those times, we were not facing the input costs of, you know, we've got a 200% increase on our input costs everywhere from the equipment that we buy, the fuel and fertilizer and planting seed, just all across the board. So this 70 cent or sub 70 cent market that we're in right now is, you know, at least 10 cents underneath our production cost.
And operating under a 7-year farm bill.
This really is so outdated. Like I said, the last farm bill, we had some high prices during when they were writing this last farm bill. And so it just doesn't give us the protection that we need when these prices are where they are today. And, you know, there's lots of outside forces that are causing these prices, but the tariff war that we're in now and just a lot of those factors have just gotten this, and coming through COVID, just wrecked our demand for cotton. You know, people were just spending all their money trying to buy food and fuel for their houses, and so clothes were just a sideline for them, and that's where we are today, and we just got to figure out some way to get out of that.
It's not just cotton farmers.
Oh, it's just been horrible for them, you know, and like I say, I also, on top of farming, well, I sat on a co-op gen board, and, you know, growing up there in O'Donnell, which is a small community, but when I was growing up, we had 7 gens, you know, around that community, and now we're down to 2. And, you know, of course, capacity is a lot more than it used to be. But still, if we end up making one of these big crops one of these days, well, it's going to take us forever to get it processed. You know, and you can't get paid until you get it processed. So, but you know, that this deal has been hard on the gins. It's hard on the trucking companies, you know, that haul our products back and forth and our cottonseed. And it's just been really tough on our whole economy.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
A comprehensive strategy to curb impacts of highly pathogenic avian influenza on the nation's poultry and egg industries and its consumers.
We are investing up to $1 billion to combat avian flu and reduce egg prices for consumers.
USDA Chief of Staff Kaylee Takash-Bowler Wednesday discussing the five-pronged strategy with reporters. The breakdown includes...
We are going to invest in biosecurity measures for all U.S. poultry producers.
Through expansion of USDA wildlife biosecurity assessments, starting at the egg-laying facility level.
Increasing our indemnity rates and really allowing farmers to better accelerate their repopulation.
Actions to reduce regulatory burdens on egg and poultry producers and explore temporary egg import options are part of the strategy, as well as...
Put up to $100 million in this bucket for innovation.
Focused on HPAI vaccine research. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.